You're listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Welcome to this pork-focused episode of the AHDB podcast. I'm Jen Waters, Head of Pork Knowledge Exchange, and in today's episode we'll be discussing the standard prig price, along with pricing and contracts, and changes to the export health certificates and what these mean for your business. First up, I've got Duncan here. So, Duncan, welcome. Just have a chat with you about what's been going on with the SPP lately.
Hello, Jen. Yeah, good afternoon. So unfortunately, the SPP has been in a bit of a decline. This probably started towards the end of July. At that time, the SPP was about 165 pence a kilogram. And unfortunately, now it sits around just above 140 pence a kilogram, which is also about 6 pence below where it was this time last year. So quite a drop, really.
Yeah, that is quite a drop. In comparison to the price, what's the cost of production looking like at the moment? So what does, you know, what does this price actually mean for producers?
Yeah, that's a really important question, because of course the pig price by itself is only really half the story, and feed costs have really been going up recently, and it's those in particular that have been also been squeezing pig farmers in the middle, shall we say. So our cost of production estimates are based on the all pig price, not the SPP. Mm-hmm. And this is typically a little bit higher than the SPP, but based on the all pig price, they suggest that on average pig farmers were making about 8 pence per kilogram in Q3. This has probably dropped closer to losing 10 pence per kilogram in Q4. And looking at January by itself, if we look at the amount the price has dropped and also feed prices increasing during January alone, the indications are that pig farmers could be losing in excess of 20 pence a kilogram. So, like, really extraordinary numbers, actually, and I'm sure pretty concerning for a lot of pig farmers.
Yeah, definitely. And at the moment, it's particularly challenging because we're seeing a lot of pigs being held back on farm due to issues with COVID at processing sites, meaning that their throughput isn't at the levels they would want it to be. We've had quite a few questions coming in over the last few weeks about the impact heavier pigs, when they do get to slaughter, will have on the SPP. Could you just talk through how that mechanism works?
Yeah, definitely. And of course, you know, pigs of all weights are included in the SPP. So it would be wrong to say that the heavy pigs in particular don't have an impact, but it's smaller than I suspect many people would guess. If you look at the 12 months up to the beginning of October of last year, then heavy pigs made up on average about 1.2% of the SPP sample. And since then, their share has been more like 3.7%. And in some weeks, it's been more than 6%. So there are definitely more of them about. As well as the SPP itself, we also publish all the weight bands that go into the SPP, so we can see what effects these heavy pigs are having. We can also calculate the average price for just those pigs under, say, 105 kilograms, if we treat that as the cutoff at which pigs become heavy, as it were. If you look at the 12 months up to the beginning of October 2020, then those pigs weighing under 105 kilograms, their price was 0.67 pence per kilogram higher than the SPP. And in the period since the beginning of October, it's probably 1.44 pence higher. So what we can say then is, since October, these heavier pigs coming into the system and coming into the SPP sample have kind of discounted the SPP by perhaps 0.75 more than ordinarily would happen. Of course, these pigs are already usually discounted compared to pigs of other weight bands. So while it's not nothing, and, you know, and I accept that 0.75 is quite a lot, especially if you're, you know, a farm producing many hundreds of pigs every single week. If we also consider the fact that, you know, at the beginning of this piece, we talked about the SPP dropping by more than 16 pence, really, since the beginning of October. So these heavy pigs are having a marginal effect, but really it's overall market factors that are weighing on the GB pig prices altogether.
OK, so that will help clear up a lot of discussions. So although there is an impact from these heavier pigs, it's not the only contributing factor.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, and it's funny, so we get a lot of questions about how the SPP moves down and whether or not it moves up at the same rate. Producers saying that they feel like it drops and stays low quicker than it will ever climb back up. So I'm quite interested to know if you've got any stats around that.
I do, actually. And again, this is something that I've been asked in the past as well. So I went and looked back at the history of the SPP. So going back to sometime in 2014, I can't remember the exact date, May, is it May 2014? Anyway, I looked over the history of the SPP and compared the average move of all the weeks when it moves up, and I compared that with the average moves of all the weeks when it moves down. And they're the same, really. So on average, every time the SPP moves up, it's moved on average by 0.62 pence, And when it moves down, it moved down by 0.61 pence. So it moves up at the same speed as it moves down, really, if you take the lifetime of the SPP. So I think it's an obvious question to ask, because a lot of people will be used to receiving a SPP minus price, or when the discounts come in, when they actually deliver their pigs. But realistically, you know, other farmers are getting SPP plus. And also, if there were always discounts that constantly fed into the SPP, essentially it would eventually grind down to zero. And obviously that isn't happening. And so there is a kind of self-regulating system into it. And that's partly because of the other things that are going into the SPP other than the SPP.
And that's actually good to be able to demonstrate. So we're demonstrating that the mechanism is working, but it's also quite interesting that we are dealing with something that is self-perpetuating. So my question kind of is, should something like an SPP even be used in pig pricing, or should it just be used as a gauge for what's going on in the market?
Yeah, again, another good question. I mean, we don't really encourage it, to be honest with you, but in the absence of another widely used price setting mechanism, it's completely understandable why the SPP is so featured so commonly in so many contracts. It's important for people to remember that the SPP is intended simply to reflect the price of pigs. It's not designed to set their price. So if you think about the sort of things that go into a contract, there are probably, I would think, four main components that probably feature into most people's contracts to one degree or another. And some people will have all of these, some people have one or two of these. So we've got the SPP itself, that will feature in a lot of people's contracts. So that what that means is that's the price of pigs for last week, or sometimes even older. If you think about last week's price, we'll have the SPP in it as well, and the last week's price will have that SPP in it. So that's what you're talking about in terms of being self-perpetuating. So we've got the last week's SPP in there. Some contracts will have an element of cost of production in there. Some contracts will have an element of a weekly contribution, or what was once called a shout price from a processor. And some contracts might have some other published reference price in there as well, from maybe a publication, that kind of thing. So not the SPP, but someone else's price. And if we think about it, only the last two of those, the weekly contribution from the processor or the published price from elsewhere, have anything really to do with the supply and demand for pigs in a particular week. Everything else just doesn't. You know, the SPP from last week doesn't really have anything to do with supply and demand for pigs this week, and the cost of production doesn't either. And so if you take it into account, that's the reason why the SPP is slow to move up and down. And that's the reason why it's really, you know, takes a long time to evolve when a lot of market forces are taking place at the same time. Yeah, so it's just the state we're in.
Yeah. I suppose it makes it quite challenging to link what's going on in the SPP with the actual value of the product at the other end. And it's interesting, something to remember, that we are trying to sell a product not only into a processor, but actually to a consumer. And there's a lot of steps in that supply chain. You touched earlier on the weighting bands that are provided by HDB when we put out the price. Presumably, so this is something that producers and processors can utilise?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as I mentioned before, along with the SPP itself, we also publish all the bands that go into the SPP as much as we can, according to confidentiality rules that we place around each band by itself. But most of the time, we publish a price and a throughput for most bands. And what that means is it's possible for anyone to go away and calculate the SPP themselves if they wanted to, or some other weight range. For example, HDB already has identified this 70 to 104.99 weight band, which is intended to reflect perhaps a more commercial range of weights that are available. And of course, that wouldn't include the very heaviest pigs, nor does it include the very lightest pigs either. So yeah, I mean, the data is there for people to use. We always publish a price. We can't always publish the throughputs necessarily. But yeah, all of that's available for people to go and investigate and perhaps even incorporate into contracts if they feel comfortable to do so.
That's quite interesting what you've just said there. It's just twigged something about throughputs. So what actually does go into the SPP? What type of pig can go in? What market share do we need? Representation of the population do we need to actually be able to put out an SPP price?
So I won't pretend to know all the nitty-gritty details. our data and analysis team know all that kind of stuff, but we obviously have rules around making sure we've got a robust sample. But in terms of what goes into the SPP sample is in the order of 80,000 pigs a week. And obviously that is less than half of the number of pigs that are slaughtered each week. So one thing to remember is all those pigs that are owned by integrated companies, none of those prices will go into the SPP. So, you know, a large integrated company might buy pigs from its kind of upstream unit, you know, its farming arm, and be bought by its processing arm, say, and there'll be there might be a transfer price or that goes that they have between themselves. We're not party to anything like that, and that price is not reported to us. So none of those pigs are going to the SPP. The only pigs that do go into the SPP are the ones where the price is determined that week, probably under a contract, that are bought and sold from an independent pig producer, often through a marketing group. We only see the prices of those pigs as they're bought by processors. What we don't know is how each of those individual prices is calculated, which is why the SPP kind of starts from scratch with a blank piece of paper every single week. And so the kind of the perpetual nature of it is really to do with the SPP featuring in those contracts. The SPP by itself starts again every single week with a completely clean slate. And so, yeah, that's the SPP sample, really. It makes up slightly less than half of all the pigs that are slaughtered in the country. And it's audited. We can follow pigs through, and every single pig has its own price as well. That's the other thing to mention, too. And so I've mentioned all these kind of pigs owned by integrated companies that, you know, they don't go into the SPP calculation itself. But the thing to remember, of course, is they do affect the balance for the market of pigs as a whole. You know, if the market has too many pigs in it, shall we say, that's going to affect the price, whether those are integrated owned pigs or independent pigs. So, yeah, it's all one market, even though our SPP represents a part of it.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important thing to remember, isn't it? That they're not part of the SPP for obvious reasons, so that they can't kind of skew the information and the pricing, but they are still a part of the market, which obviously will then impact on market demands. It's really interesting stuff. It always really interests me watching what's going on in the SPP. And I hope that this has been useful and interesting to people. If you've got any more questions at all, please don't hesitate to get in touch with your knowledge exchange manager, Duncan, the MI team. Just get in touch. We'll be happy to hear from you. For the second part of our podcast, I'll be talking to Lauren Dimmock and Christine Walsh around export health certificates. The first few months of third country status have certainly presented their challenges, particularly in terms of export of pork and pork products. If your products are usually exported to the EU, you will likely have already faced the additional paperwork or may have some outstanding questions as to what you need to do to comply. Now we're a couple of months into the new process, we have greater clarity on the new requirements and can hopefully help answer some of your questions. We are keeping a close watch on whether we'll face similar issues when Great Britain enacts the import requirements. Currently, DEFRA are holding a host of webinars to help companies with the new import regulations, and we'll post more information on the website when it's available. So first, over to you, Lauren. If you could just introduce yourself and tell us what's changed.
Yeah, hi, Jen. I'm Lauren Dimmock. I'm a health and welfare scientist, so I look after various sort of health, welfare, disease surveillance projects within pork. And so what's changed? As of the 1st of January 2021, export health certificates are now a requirement for all products of animal origin going into the EU. So they've always been a requirement for products of animal origin going further afield, but now it's a requirement that these are certified going into the EU. So this means that every consignment of pork that leaves a UK abattoir that's destined for the EU will need to be signed off by the official vet or the OV to meet some new criteria that are laid out in the export health certificate. In order to sign these certificates, the OV needs to have the evidence that these conditions have been met. And the main point, really, the main changes are around making sure we've got this evidence in the event of an audit from the EU. So firstly, you'll see there's a new clause that asks producers to confirm that their pigs, and this is quite wordy, their pigs have from birth been kept separate from wild cloven hoofed animals, and then to confirm that there are good biosecurity and management practices in place. So this is basically asking for producers to confirm that their pigs have either been housed, so they're indoors, or there's suitable fencing to prevent access from wild animals such as deer or feral wild boar. And this then needs to be signed by your vet. So secondly, all pork for export to the EU now has to be trichinella tested before it's prepared for export. Now, the UK has been free from trichinella for many years. But the main point is that in our current status of third country status, we've now got to prove this is the case and actually provide the evidence whilst further negotiations go on and we can apply for our sort of position with controlled housing.
Thanks, Lauren. So just looking at that, you would have had to provide some sort of health certificate anyway when you were a producer, but what we're saying essentially is that there are additional requirements on that. I'm quite interested in the piece around fencing to prevent access from wild animals such as deer or feral wild boar. Does this mean there are additional requirements if you're, say, a free range farmer, or are our current fencing requirements okay?
Yeah, so to be honest, it's likely that your fencing requirements are okay, but our best advice is to speak to your vet because they obviously know the units well. So your vet will be able to provide you with a new quarterly veterinary certificate. And if you're red tractor assured, this is separate from your quarterly veterinary certificate. It's an additional piece of paper that your vet will certify to say that they know your unit, they've checked that either your pigs are housed or that you've got the suitable fencing or physical barrier to prevent any access from wild boar or deer. And the Pig Vet Society have actually issued some instructions and a template certificate for their members, and that's been sent round. But if you're a mixed farm practice or a smaller practice and you haven't had access to that, you can get that from our website, or you can contact pighub@ahdb.org.uk and we can provide you with a copy. And then you can just copy that onto your practice template and issue it to your clients.
Brilliant. Thanks, Lauren. So that's for everybody if they're going into an abattoir that is going to be exporting to the EU. Yeah. So once you've got your certificate, what do you need to do then?
Yeah, so once you've got your certificate, you need to do two things on Pig Hub. So first of all, log on to Pig Hub. If you're not familiar, you can get in touch. There's some user guides online on our website, and I think the notes will be, we can put a link to that in the show notes. But also you can phone the Bureau if you're unsure, or speak to or email pighub@ahdb, and we'll put all those details in the show notes. But once you've logged on, you need to confirm that you've got a quarterly veterinary statement. And by making that sort of, by ticking that box, this will feed into EML2 and then onto your movement license. So when your pigs arrive at the abattoir can see that you've filled that criteria and it's all nice and simple. And then the second thing is to tick a box to confirm that attestation. So confirm the fact that to the best of your knowledge, you've consulted with your vet and your pigs have been kept since birth separate from wild cloven hoofed animals. And the extra clause around this is by ticking that box, you're also confirming that that's consistent across the supply chain. So for example, you know that the farm that supplied these pigs to you in the first place was also certified. So all the farms in the chain are certified that the pigs have been kept separate from the wild cloven hoofed animals. So it's a bit of a mouthful and it's unlikely to be anything new. It's just a case of providing the evidence. That's the main thing. It's a case of providing the evidence to the EU that we are complying and doing what we say we're doing. And yeah, that's it.
Fab, thanks. So just to make sure that I understand this then, do they need to provide with their haulier a paper copy of this certificate for every load, or is it just for if we were audited, they can demonstrate it?
Just if they're audited. So yeah, good question. They'll need to keep a copy of that certificate. So the vet will give you a certificate, you'll keep it on farm in your records, and then if your abattoir is audited, you'll be asked to provide that to the EU. So yeah, really important that it stays on farm and it's not sent with the pigs.
Fab, thanks Lauren. Thank you. Lots of tweaks to the things that we're used to, but hopefully we can get it sorted and make it easy enough. I think it's really important to remember that whole supply chain piece, so it's not just the farm that they're on now, but it's everywhere where these animals have been. Christine, can I ask you about the products of animal origin, especially animal byproducts, and what's been going on there?
Yes, thanks, Jen. Hi, my name's Christine Walsh and I'm head of transition and have been working with many of the trade associations to support the pig industry and the rest of the levy industries through Brexit. As Lauren has said, the export health certificates are now a requirement for all products of animal origin, referred to as POAO, going to the EU. But there are different export health certificates for the different products, and the abattoir's OV should know which EHC they should use depending on whether the product is a carcass or carcass meat or offals or animal byproducts. Now, fortunately, meat exported to the EU doesn't need a standstill period due to the agreements we have with the EU. However, for animal byproducts, they're covered by different regulations and they require different EHCs. So, for example, the EHC for animal byproducts being exported for the manufacture of pet food asks the OV for evidence that the animals have been on the last holding for a minimum of 40 days. Now, we intend to add this as a question to the Farm to Slaughter Movement licence, and new licences will be being produced. However, if the pigs, so they'll be being produced over the next few weeks, we're hoping to get them out. These will just cover pure farm to slaughter moves. So there is a caveat that if pigs go through the market, we will not be able to export their animal byproducts to the EU.
Okay, that's, I suppose, for a commercial abattoir, that's manageable. We can build that in. That's perfectly fine. But it is for these other routes, such as going to market, that we need to be more aware of. Now, animal byproducts, that's basically fifth quarter, is that right?
Animal byproducts are products that are suitable for human consumption. However, the business has taken the decision that they're not going to go for human consumption. They can go for either pharmaceutical goods or for pet food.
Fab. Thanks, Christine. So there's a lot of acronyms to get our head round there, and some changes, but we'll keep everybody updated with what's going on with those licences. Aside from POAO, what's the latest position with trichinella testing?
Yeah, following on from what Lauren has said, the UK hasn't had trichinella for many years. However, because we're a third country, we now have to provide evidence, like every other third country that exports to the EU, that we don't have trichinella. Now, we're currently applying for recognition that the controlled housing measures that we have are suitable and will avoid the need for testing. Until these are approved and the EU has to approve them, the GB exports of live pigs or fresh pig meat will need to be tested for trichinella before export. This also applies to products such as hams that are salted by external companies and then can be exported for exported as well. However, we have been granted a derogation for unweaned piglets under the age of 5 weeks.
Thanks, Christine. An awful lot to get our head around again. Is this likely to change?
We are hoping that the situation will change following further negotiations. But for now, all exports to the EU will be subject to these new requirements.
Brilliant. Thanks, Christine. So if anybody is looking for some more information, there's a full Q&A document along with user instructions on the website. This information is included in the show notes. On there, you can find all the instructions for accessing Pig Hub and updating your information. But if you have any more specific queries, you can email pig.hub@ahdb.org.uk or call the EAML2 helpline on 0844 335 8400. The helpline is open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And if you've got export queries, we've attached a guidance document from DEFRA in the show notes. You can also contact DEFRA directly on traders@defra.gov.uk.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Pork Talk. After the exceptional year that 2020 was, we take a look at what 2021 could have in store for UK markets. We expect that clean pig throughputs this year will total 11.2 million head, which if realised will be around 3% higher than in 2020. This rise in slaughter follows from a slightly larger breeding herd in 2020, expected improvements in productivity and the backlog of pigs. In the final quarter of 2020, processor kill schedules were disrupted due to COVID, which has led to a number of pigs being backed up on farms. We expect that the extra number of pigs will most likely be worked through in the second quarter of this year, when the number of pigs coming forward is typically lower. However, there's quite a bit of uncertainty about the current number of pigs backed up. Note that Q2 of 2020 was particularly low due to processors pulling pigs forward into Q1 at the start of the pandemic. As we're comparing to an unusually low slaughter period, This also makes the estimated annual change in Q2 2021 seem large. Clean pig carcass weights were record-breaking in 2020, and we largely expect to see further growth this year, particularly while the issue of the backlog is being addressed. With the combination of heavier carcass weights and higher slaughter, we expect production to reach 1.02 million tonnes this year. If realised, this will be 4% more than in 2020, and the first time production surpasses the 1 million tonne mark since 1999. We expect that UK imports could decline in 2021. This is due to the expectation that the recovery in the eating out sector will not fully compensate for the likelihood of falling volumes in the retail sector. We also expect that exports will decline this year due to a drop in Chinese demand and disruption to exports following the UK's departure from the EU. For a more detailed view of our expectations for 2021, follow the link below.
So, thank you for listening to this pork special of the HDB podcast. And if you want to access any more of this information, please look at the show notes.